Hi, sorry, just to raise a point that Harriet made at the start. You seem to be saying that social media offers a platform, as it were, for people who would be, you know, more or less uncontactable if it weren't for that, and then it seems to raise those people up in view of society. You seem to be mentioning that a lot about women, but I'd argue that social media actually has an adverse effect on how our society sees women. It demoralises them, it forces us as a society to subscribe to this arbitrary standard of beauty that is unattainable for most people, and I just want to hear your view on that. Is social media more of a hindrance in terms of the feminism movement, or are we pushing ourselves back?
But do you think social media is worse than the traditional media when it comes to those images of women?
I'd say that it's more accessible, and because it's more accessible, we accept it more. It's acceptable for people to, you know, womanise and be more misogynistic in their day-to-day lives, and they don't even notice they're doing it anymore because it's there all the time.
And of course, we wouldn't broadcast on the radio someone saying these appallingly sexist things, but on Twitter there's no filter, they can go ahead and say them. Harriet?
I think what I said was that it provides an opportunity. So I think you're completely right, and a lot of the stuff around the hashtag Twitter silence was people standing up to the really misogynistic and sexist abuse that women get online, particularly online. It's like a uniquely online dynamic. But what my argument would be, and what I would be hoping for, because I think it's important to be hopeful, is that the reason that that is there, the reason that there's a deluge of misogyny and sexism online is because misogyny and sexism exist, and because people who are sexist and misogynistic see the opportunity that women have to have a voice and to have a platform and to make a point.
We're just getting
to hear
that.
And trying to sort of squash that down, or to, you know, to sort of chase
Twitter,
people away from
by
that.
Any chance?
I was. Yeah.
Do you ever, there's a Twitter feed called Everyday Sexism. Do you ever follow
that?
Which is very good.
Yeah.
And what it does is it finds examples of everyday sexism on Twitter. Ordinary people, celebrities, news people, whatever. And it puts them on a platform. It puts them out there every day, throughout the day, and names and shames people who have engaged in this kind of commentary, includes the tweets and full quotations. Now, isn't that positive, actually?
Yeah, essentially something like that is positive, and it's great to see that people like that have a voice and are pushing things forward. But then on the other side, we have so much, there's such a strong following of people that feel like the internet and social media give them a platform to say whatever they want without filters, and there is no need to be, you know, to hold back. They can be racist, they can be sexist. It is essentially a free-for-all for people that have the intention of spreading hate.
In some ways, we're into the censorship debate here, because one of the things I think that the new media has done brilliantly is challenge dictatorships across the world, and that's why you have blockages in China and places like that for Google. But if you have Audioboo, you know the Audioboo site, I can take out my phone, I could record an interview with Wayne right now, hit a button and broadcast it to the world within seconds. Anybody in the world who wants to access it can hear what he said. Now, if we were standing at the side of Tiananmen Square watching a despotic regime about to commit a war crime or a human rights abuse, and I could film it on my phone and record an interview and post it, I don't need to go through the traditional media, post it immediately to the world. That is the greatest threat to dictatorship, isn't it? That transparency is the greatest threat to dictators anywhere in the world. And I wonder about the filter debate and the censorship debate, because yes, when we don't have that censorship, we will hear what the sexists, the homophobes, the racists are saying, but I'd rather hear what they're saying and challenge them rather than put in a filter system that might keep out the voices of people who have important things to say as well.
Where's the time for reflection? And where's
a bit louder, please.
Where's the time for reflection, and where's the time for the challenge? I think your point's really well made. It's instant. I think, as Tony said earlier on, luckily the Facebook poster was stupid enough to identify himself. Mm-hmm. And there are people with a platform and an opportunity to broadcast and publish stuff that would never have had that opportunity before. And yes, here, it's great when it's worth making that point. But there is so much that's either damaging or not worth publication. But there's no reflection on it. There's no... there's no value. There's no, will I broadcast that
there's
piece by so
There's a problem with the reflection argument, Ethna. Who does the reflecting? Whose values guide what is allowed to be published?
I'm talking about the person who's saying it. I don't even take
about,
time
when
to
When we're
reflect.
Talking about an international platform like Twitter, whose values should be guiding what gets published or not?
Yeah. How do you handle
that?
But I'm talking about the self-reflection, that if just because I can, I do. Mm. I don't check myself, almost, if I can
right.
say
oh,
that.
Right.
If I can say, you know, a nasty or an ugly or, you know, or a sexist comment, just because I can doesn't mean that I should or that I do.
You're right, yeah.
So it's the personal check I'm interested in and how we learn that.
Hey, just come back to what Tony said at the start about the user who threatened one of their constables. Mm-hmm. Would it be something that the PSNI would use a lot to try and track down information about people writing certain comments? Well, we all seen a certain Belfast City Councillor been arrested and charged last week. And would it be something the police do a lot, looking at social networking sites, seeing that people are making threats, especially here with the sectarian divide, and also just sort of picking up intelligence and information on crimes? Like, I've seen a lot of people posting pictures of themselves, and just stupid, just doing things that shouldn't be doing on Facebook or writing about it. So just out of interest, would it be something that the police would use to try and pursue charges, or was something they could use in the future?
Let me just remind everybody, in a live case, we're not allowed to talk too much about that, even in this forum, so
yeah.
Everyone...
Within the PSNI, we, as I say, we do have a digital media centre. Rick and myself would just monitor Facebook, PSNI, West Belfast on a daily basis because they can't monitor everything. But there's certain buzzwords could go be put through, especially up, for example, up to the marching season, parade season.
Are you doing that on Twitter?
We can do that through. They use a thing they can do through Twitter or whatever they're using.
So
they can
using
put up,
sectarian buzzwords, going
yeah,
looking for
anything that they, you know,
language?
For example, when all the trouble happened last year in around Carlisle Circus and so forth. Thankfully for the police, they were able to filter out any comments that people may say, let's go down to Denmark Street. So the word Denmark Street was come up, then they can send in the police before they arrive. So again, it was one of those ones, a few things had to happen first for us to get then on top of that. But that's the way, you know, it's to say always on the back foot. But we do have within our digital media centre, I'm not sure Ricky knows because I certainly don't know how they use it because, as I say, we only get the low-level bit. But they can filter things out like that. And it comes to the one that I dealt with. As I say, mine was quite simple because he left all the stuff there. But we can go through to Facebook, we can go through to Twitter. We can then contact them directly through our communications people and say, this is what I need. If we've got the person's unique ID reference number, doesn't matter where they are in the world, we can get their IP address. And it says nothing's ever deleted. So although they have deleted the post, the comment, even deleted the Facebook account, we can still get the IP address of the computer of which that person was posted from. So, you know, there's nowhere to hide in that sense. So we can...
So if they're swooped on, then you take the computer and
yeah,
you can,
and do that
you can discover
that.
It, even
yeah.
if they've deleted it.
Even if they've deleted it,
they would
yeah.
have to absolutely erase everything on their computer.
But even
again.
Then, they're still within... They may delete their computer and crash their computer, but Facebook will still have a record of it in their central server. So there's always ways around things. So,
does Facebook cooperate with the police in giving private information up?
I'd say they're getting better at it.
Or getting worse, depending on
your
point of
view. Or getting worse, depending. The biggest problem that I have found through a few investigations of my own, there's a guy come to me, somebody was asking about stalking earlier. There was a guy come to me asking about this person who put a post up on Facebook. Their picture and everything's on there, their name. But I don't know where that person's from. I'm not a friend of theirs, so I can't go on and check it. And so we have to go through and we have to get the unique ID number of that person. Thankfully, there's more than one Tony Allen in the world. So if I put Tony Allen on Facebook, there'll be so many of them, unless you see my photograph mm-hmm. and that type of thing. So unless we have the person's unique identification number, we still may not be able to access that person's account, even though we tried, and then Facebook won't. And if we have that information and we go to Facebook, they are obliged to give it back to us. They are in America, so there may be a bit of trick, but I know that Facebook UK would help us out with that and stuff like that. So in that sense, to answer your question, we can use it, and depending on the circumstances, we will use it, depending on what happens.
A lot of rioting these days is coordinated on...
Exactly, because everyone puts it on Facebook, Twitter, on their mobile phones, and they showed it to me one day, and I just thought, this is a great tool, I wish I could use it, but I'm not allowed to use it. You just show all the different words, and you can just type in... You can even type in West Belfast, just for an example, and everything that mentions West Belfast at all, whether it be a good thing, bad thing, and it can be just then anything to do with, you know, even PSNI or riots or whatever, we can put them all together and hopefully stop it before it happens.
Ricky, if you use this technology, this is quite interesting insight into how police are using digital policing. If you use this technology and you see someone who has a run of sectarian language, they're not planning a riot, they're not using incitement to violence language, but it's full of sectarian language. Could you send a message to that person privately and say, you know, we're conscious that you're using this kind of language, you might want to be careful?
Yes, it would have to be challenged effectively. If it's placed onto the West Belfast page for the PSNI, it would be challenged.
What about a Twitter function so that when certain language comes up, certain sectarian terms, they automatically get a tweet from you saying, this is sectarian language, you might want to be careful?
At present, we do not have any facility for that. I was actually speaking to our digital communications team earlier this morning in relation to that specifically, and it is something that is
to be looked
at. Could be an interesting
nudge, just a nudge without getting overly policing about it.
However, at the moment, our process would be that if it is reported to us or we notice it ourselves being posted to our site, if, for example, if I see it or a member of the public comes either into the station or phones up and says, I have seen this on somebody's site, we would then investigate it.
Yeah.
But there's no, currently there is no no setup to try and censor.
It's nudging. It's what economists call nudging. I think it could be interesting before we get sort of into the criminal justice system with someone that we simply nudge their behaviour.
If I see something that not necessarily can be taken in the wrong context, but what it might lead to, I would probably delete the post and contact the person and say, I've deleted your post because although you are saying it in a okay comment, somebody may take it the wrong way and it may escalate, which is what we happen a lot. You know, if we are talking about any ongoing investigation or any report that police are getting and one side is say it automatically goes straight into the other side. So if even if somebody uses a word that they could be perceived from the other side of the community as wrong, we try to stop it. Now, it depends on the seriousness of the comment. If I say somebody was just using a derogatory term about the other side of the community, I would tend to delete that post, speak to that person, say, look, you probably don't mean that the way it is, but this is a warning for you. But I have to do that personally.
Just a question for you, William. You brought up the positive side towards social media being used in the Arab Spring. But would you not consider it a bad thing in terms of the censorship that was found by John Pilger to be used by BBC itself in minimising the coverage given such incidents, such as like the Palestinian conflict or the trouble going on in the Basque? There was a case found where there was a bombing in Palestine and there were two Israeli spokesmen invited to the BBC studio to answer questions, but not one Palestinian was offered to give their side of view. So in itself, that's propaganda and censorship been used by mainstream media. Would you like to address that?
Questions above my pay grade. I'd have to be earning as much as Stephen Nolan to deal with that. I don't know the details of those individual cases. I just know when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on any programme I work on, and I work on a lot of programmes, different platforms from Radio 4, 3, Radio Ulster, television, documentaries and the rest, that we are very careful with our balancing of all of that. And I respect John Pilger enormously, actually. And I'm not saying we get it right every time. And I certainly don't speak for the BBC in terms of its editorial policy. But I think we do a pretty good job in trying to get it right. On the individual details of the individual, I'd have to look at them to make my own moral judgment. But I think you're right to ask the question.
No, I just wanted to share a wee bit of advice that I got as regards posting on Twitter and Facebook. Just the 10-second rule. Think before you post. Think of the repercussions. You know, what way is this going to be taken? You know, don't do it instant. Sort of think there's going to be ramifications after this, maybe. You know, so.
Don't do it when you're drunk.
Yes, exactly. Like me.
You hypocrite. I've seen what you do online. Connell.
Hiya. I think we've more or less touched base with the good side, the bad side. I think I'm sort of halfway between the dark and the light. I don't really know. I use it for work a lot and the outreach to young people and to connect and speak to young people, to give them advice and stuff like that. They're online in regards to the arts and whatever. I would just like to know, just we're coming to the end now, and I would just like to know the young people themselves. I know a couple of you have spoke, but your own general experiences from it. I know you're a generation that you've grew up with social media and you know, connectivity. But I just want your own general opinion. What do you think? Or is it just a way of life for you now? Is it, you know, as one of the panel did make out, that you are a generation that has grew up with this. We didn't. So I was just looking at your opinion, basically. So that's a question to the young people.
Can you remember life before emails?
Of course.
Can you?
Yeah.
Really?
Building huts and all that carry on, yeah. Playing a PlayStation 1. And a Game Boy.
How old were you? When did you get your first computer, Wayne?
I remember a Spectrum ZX and a Commodore 64 kicking around the house.
Oh, the Spectrum wasn't the ZX. You're thinking of the ZX81.
The ZX. Yeah,
the Spectrum came after the ZX.
Floppy,
I had a ZX81. The Spectrum
was floppy,
the next generation.
Yeah. It had a floppy. But could I just add...
Well, we're going to take Connell's question to everybody. Anybody want to respond to that? How are you approaching it? Is it just part of your life now?
Yeah, I think we're all beginning to nearly almost live our lives on Facebook. You put everything up, like what you have for breakfast, what time you're going to bed at. I think it's becoming a bit ridiculous. Well, I wouldn't personally. I just cringe at everybody else that does it. But yeah, it's horrible. But in terms of younger children, children younger than us, I think they're even being online now and playing video games and games on the internet. And I think it's sad because whenever I was younger, we were outside. You know, you weren't let in. You had to go out and play and climb trees or do whatever you wanted to do. But I think now kids they're not going outside as much. They're not getting involved in exercise or physical activity and stuff that they're just missing out in their childhood, really.
Can I just follow on with what Tirsha said? I think that, we were all outside when we were younger, and I think that because kids aren't in now, they're sort of losing imagination. It's sort of being eaten up by social media, but for us, because we've sort of developed our imagination, it's sort of spreading on social media for us. But I think younger kids need to develop it a bit more before they can start using it.
They show me a picture of their breakfast, mm-hmm. and then they tell me what they're doing for lunch, and who they're meeting, and I delete these people. But if you follow people who have interesting things to say, who post interesting documents that you might not have found yourself, it can really open your mind to imaginative things. It all depends. You were deciding who's on your timeline.
Yeah, it's us. Like, I think, because we are the sort of generation that were out when we were younger and developing the imagination, and now we can sort of display the imagination on social media, but younger people now are sort of sitting in. Like, my brother, he's 11, and, you know, him and his friends are more sort of on social media rather than out playing. And I think that is sort of, killing his imagination before he has a chance to develop it instead of...
What age are you?
I'm 16.
You're 16.
Yeah. 17, sorry. Birthday was 2 days ago. Yeah, I'm actually fluent in Irish, and I'm starting to learn French for our level. So it's actually really, really helpful. I have Irish as my setting on Facebook, and sometimes French on my phone. So yeah, it's really helpful.
Hi, I'd just like to say, our generation has grown up where information is instantaneous. You can reach everything at the touch of a button. And as William was saying, with the Syria and the Arab uprisings, it's been great in terms of getting information that you wouldn't normally have access to out there in terms of human atrocities and violations of human rights. But I would just like to ask, are we devaluing information as a whole? Because it's so instantaneous, we have access to it. We create this culture of disposable information where we will take things in and then immediately throw it away. Do we have any value remaining for, you know, literature or, you know, the art of communication?
I've argued the point now for quite some time, and some people like it and some people don't, that I don't think the technologies or the platforms are either positive
right.
or negative. or even neutral. I think it's how we're using it. Yeah. I think the young people now that are using technology, me included, have taken it for granted, and we absolutely have, because it's just been thrown upon us. Yeah. But what's fundamentally important to remember at all times is that education is so important. We need to learn how to use the technology positively. The whole bystanding thing in relation to cyberbullying is hugely important, not just from the negative aspect, but from the positive aspect. And the guys from the PSNI were mentioning earlier on, if you see someone posting a comment which is negative or which is inappropriate, it's a good opportunity for you to have a word with them. Send them a message and say, look, that potentially may get you in trouble. So I'm looking for an army of bystanders out there who can help, you know, make more awareness to how positive it is.
Before it gets into policing.
Before it gets that far.
The community develops its own values.
Absolutely.
And we want as much openness, as much transparency as possible, but we also want to nudge people away from inappropriate behaviour.
Yeah.
Like rules agreed in a room.
Completely.
I think that would
be unwritten rules almost, because that's what it needs. Because it's so underground, because it's so, you know, we all love it, we all like it, we all like to use it, but if we're not careful, we're going to land ourselves in some serious hot water. Education is important. I can't stress that enough. For your own career aspirations, who the people you connect with, to the messages that you're pushing out into the public domain, think about what you post. I mean, you mentioned it and you summed it up really well. It's that 10-second rule. And I find myself thinking very, very carefully about a tweet that I want to send, maybe for 4 or 5 minutes, because I know the response that it's going to get. It can either wind someone up or it can provoke a response. So,
do you ever tweet from the bathroom?
Yeah.
Does everybody tweet from the bathroom? Put your hand up if you've ever tweeted from the bathroom. Shame. Oh, look at these virtuous people. Shame on all of us. We must have better things to do in the bathroom than tweeting. Last couple of comments from the floor. Anybody want to say anything? Remark anything?
Can I just say in relation to friends, like you have, I know people that have 1,000 friends on Facebook, and you think, surely, I have about 4 mates. Yeah, I'd go and trust and say, look, I need help or whatever. But how can you, like, I just think, especially on Twitter as well, you can have a million people following you, and you have to be on the utmost, like, watch yourself what you're writing, because I only have got 4 mates I would go and trust or something. But 300 other people, like, it's like, if you like something, I'm guaranteed another 10 people are going to like it. So say you get, like, 70 likes on a status, and 700 people have seen that. You just have to be careful.
And there's too much emphasis on that friends, which you just mentioned. Most people on average have about 497 friends on Facebook. And I had a parent come to me not that long ago who said to me, their daughter was extremely upset, really, really upset. And I says, what happened to her? What was wrong? He says, it was her birthday recently, and she was not upset by the amount of cards that she didn't get. She was not upset by the amount of presents that she didn't get. She was really upset by the amount of people who didn't wish her happy birthday on Facebook. Now, that may seem funny, or it may seem very, very sad. I think it's the sad element of it, because it's taken that control of our life. When we post something to Facebook, we want people to like it.
It's saying it for what it is. Like, Facebook is, like, it's almost like a game, or like, it, you know, you've only got to see it for what it is, not for real friendships. And I think that what you said is incredibly insightful and perceptive. And the whole idea of social media essentially is it's a vehicle, or it's a machine or a toy that enables people to be racist, sexist, homophobic, violent, petty, stalking, all of that stuff. But all of that stuff exists in society anyway. And all of these relationships and fake relationships exist in society anyway. And the social media, we just need to know it for what it is, like know your enemy sort of thing. It can hurt us, but it can also be a good thing. And that's what I would raise kids and young people to know, is it's a toy or it's a game. And everything that's dark and sinister about it is out there in society anyway.
Yeah, I just want to say, as regards comments as well, even liking pages, I've heard examples of employers taking people up because they've liked a certain page as well. It's not just comments, you know, so just that wee bit of advice.
You've got employers now who are trawling through people's Facebook pages before the interview so that they can bring up things that they said on Facebook during the interview. Oh, I see on Saturday night you have a pattern of going out and getting absolutely pissed That kind of thing. Employers are actually well.
I would argue that most of us have been a cyberbully at one point or another. If you look at the things that we like on Facebook, we've liked something without actually reading into it or looking what it means. Yeah. We've either liked it or we've shared it or we've retweeted it. 60% of all people, 60% of all retweets on Twitter, people don't read them.
But like for most people doesn't mean like. It just means I've read it or I acknowledge it or I noticed it. That's all it means.
Or endorsed it.
Not necessarily, no.
No,
a like is not an
you could argue.
No.
What I think the main problem is people will be friends on Facebook that they wouldn't necessarily, they would avoid if they were outside. I mean, you could be outside and you'd look at a group of friends and say, I'm not going to go over there because I don't like any of them and I don't like their opinions. So if that's the way you are in real life, then why would you friend them on Facebook or why would you follow them on Twitter? Because you know you're going to get offended.
It's important to know what he's saying, isn't it? Doesn't mean you're agreeing with everything he's saying. Good God. You want to have a comment? Nope. One last one? Anyone desperate? Yeah? Final one? No. You were going to... No. Anyone got a final comment? Question? Comment? Yes? This has got to be the last one because we're out of our time.
Anecdote. I know a friend of mine who got mugged. And he says when he was chasing after the guy that mugged him, he was already thinking about how a class Facebook post it was going to make.
And as we descend into UTV territory. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's thank our panel. That's been terrific. Brilliant.